There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer, and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great-looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection, and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
Ladies and gentlemen, you want experience during your football season? Well, buckle up, sweet cheeks.
That's all we need.
We've got all the experience in the world. This is I Want Your Flex with Dan Beyer and Mike Harmon. Mike and Dan break down everything you need to set your lineups. From position rankings to starts and sits, the guys help you make those hard decisions. And now, let's get your flex on. Here's Dan Beyer and Mike Harmon.
And then there were two. It is I Want Your Flex. Get Mike at Swollen Dome. You can find me at Dan Beyer on Fox. And our executive producer is Ryan Bershinger. He's hanging out as well. Find him at Ryan Bershinger. So it's the Chiefs and the Niners, guys, in Super Bowl 58. Their paths to get there, quite different considering what we saw on Sunday from Kansas City, jumping out to their lead and then holding on against Baltimore. But we start in the NFC, and Mike, we start with you. The 49ers rally from that 24-7 deficit to the Lions, ended up taking them about a quarter or so to pull even and then pull ahead. Let's start it with that NFC matchup and how San Francisco gets to the championship game. Is it all Dan Campbell? Where do you stand and how the Lions failed and the Niners moved on?
I can't put a lot of blame on – I don't put nearly as much blame on Campbell as everybody else. Smith and I argued about it all night. I know we've had other folks on the Fox Sports Radio Network calling for him to be fired as a preemptive strike. I mean, hot take nonsense reigns supreme. But, you know, in the end, true to who he was, everybody that's citing the, hey, he kicked the field goal before on a fourth down, there were 10 seconds left in the first half.
Yeah.
That's not a normal down distance. Yeah. What happens from here going forward? So using that as an example of him going against his normal self is asinine to me in a million ways. I think I got Smith mad at me and to where he told me to shut up at one point, which was great. But then you get to the second half. Like, they called the perfect play on that fourth down play, right? They give up a field goal, fine, little bit of whatever, anxiousness, momentum, whatever. But you call a perfect play, and it hits Reynolds. Is it 100% a perfect pass from Goff? No, it's not. But you're a professional damn receiver. Catch the ball. That's a first down. That's either another 4 minutes off the clock or perhaps another explosive play that gets you to the end zone. All of that rendered moot. But now Dan Campbell's the bad guy because that guy can't catch a football? And then the defense gives up a touchdown on the ensuing drive? That's his fault on a 51-yard ball that should have been picked off? Instead, it bounces up by the football gods for a 51-yard reception? I can't. Dan Campbell wore a lot that I don't think he should have out of this.
I think Dan Campbell's wearing a lot of it on himself, like in the post-game press conference, because of kind of what you're saying, Mike. I think the Jahmyr Gibbs fumble was... That's the
absolutely.
That's the roof, you know, falling in on a house fire. Like, that's like, oh, okay, this is not going to be salvageable. This is going to be very, very difficult to try to rebound from. That was the toughest one of them all. Not that there weren't other tough ones, but I thought, wow, that one. I mean, even on the Ayuk, there was going to be a flag on the play. Maybe they're not as close to the goal line, but still. And you're right about Reynolds, 100%. If it hits you in the hands like it did, and he had two actually occasions to try to opportunities to try to catch it and couldn't bring it in, and you're still up by 14 at that point. And yeah, I agree on the time thing. That's the other thing, is you take another 3 minutes off, and whether you kick the field goal then or end up scoring that touchdown. Now San Francisco has about 17 minutes or so to try to come back from that three-score deficit. So they have to play absolutely perfect football. And the conundrum that I find myself in is, Mike, I thought they should have gone for it in the third quarter. And then with the opportunity to tie it at 27-24, I thought they should have kicked it at that point. Like, I'm not you know, Dan Campbell is all in. We're going to go, you know, for it all the way. I was 50-50 on that. And you're 100% right about the end of the first half. The 49ers were not going to be pinned deep. That's the reason that you, one of the main reasons as well, that you go for it instead of maybe kicking a field goal, is you want to back a team up inside the 10-yard line, inside the 5-yard line. But the two that they had in the second half, I would have gone for the first one, which they didn't get. I would have kicked the second one.
Yeah, I was confused a little on the second one. But again, it goes back to, all right, Michael Badgley's your kicker. And this is where we start getting into the, yeah, if you don't trust him, you shouldn't have him on the roster, whatever. 47 is not a gimme.
No.
For most kickers. And certainly when you look at Badgley and some of the others that would have been in this spot, do I necessarily think he's hammering it home? But it's also, and I'm with you, I'm like 50-50 on a coin, like as he ran it out. Like even the first time when they ran the ball with St. Brown, like Greg Olsen in the booth just said, well, they obviously are going for it. And as like, you know, Burkhart's trying to sell the drama of it. And Olsen's like, well, they called that play, so they're going for it, so just wait. And then they run the play. But the second time, yeah, 50-50. Like, all right, but it's a long field goal. So maybe he's still in the... All right, I got to play, and, you know, old Wonder Boy over here, our OC who's interviewing with everybody, he's going to have a play that's going to get us right. And then timing disrupted, et cetera. I mean, St. Brown was open. Ball just never got anywhere near him, right? So it's one of those. But you still had, again, 7 minutes, 7 minutes on the clock, and it's, all right, defense, go make a play. And maybe by that point, momentum, confidence, and everything had been shaken. So, you know, it was inevitable that they would drive down for a touchdown, as so many have argued. I can't think about it that way. You were so great in the first half. The one touchdown off the Ayuk play that, you know, finishes off. I mean, that's fluky. I mean, you make plays or you don't. But, you know, that one, I could have gone either way. But again, you still got to play four quarters of football.
I think the worst call, actually, was not the fourth downs. I think it was the third and goal.
The final minute. Yeah, 100%.
Trying to run it up the gut on third and goal forcing them to burn their first timeout. That cost them 40 seconds on the Niners, you know, when the Niners got the ball back there. If they throw it, it's an incompletion. They ice the clock. They keep that timeout, and they conceivably have like 45 seconds and get the ball back at the very end. So I thought that was really the most egregious error. But overall, I agree completely with Harmon. I think ultimately it comes down to execution. The fact that Josh Reynolds drops that fourth down pass, and if he catches that as he should, then I don't think we're having as much of this conversation. But really tough to watch. But
Here's also why that third down run was so bad, because they had to use the timeout. Was they didn't need the touchdown.
Yeah,
that you could have kicked a field goal in that scenario where you're then within seven, and you still need the onside kick, or you need that stop. Now, granted, on the next drive, you need the touchdown, but it wasn't end-all, be-all in, like, we have to get into the end zone. You prefer it in that situation, but if you would have, you know, just ended up standing, you know, or staying pat on where you were, you still could have ended up kicking that field goal and having, you know, all of your timeouts if it was an incomplete situation. Like, that would have been... that would have been fine, and maybe in the end, then we're saying, well, why are you kicking the field goal from, you know, fourth and goal at the, you know, the 3 yard line? But even in that scenario, a field goal doesn't kill you. I know it's not ideal because you are so close, but worst case scenario, or, you know, or whatever, you at least got to get some points on the board, and you got to keep time on the clock, and that didn't.
Well, that's just it. You're managing to both of those things. You know, we've talked, I think, ad nauseum for the Lions side of it. You know, credit to the 49ers. We played the George Kittle video of him going up and down the sideline. All right, stay loose, you know, going to Purdy and everything. It's like, yeah, I can't wait to say I told you so, you know, after the game and all. And then they came in, and when the Lions laid it down, they went and picked it up in every spot. They took advantage of every error, every miscalculation, every piece of lack of execution, some of the game planning, right? You go away from the run game in long stretches, which makes no sense. Not as bad as Baltimore, but we'll chronicle that in a minute. But it's the, you know, the idea that you got away from yourself going into the second half. And, you know, for Brock Purdy, was he perfect? No. But again, you don't have to be. You make a couple of plays, the football gods have a couple go your way, make a couple of big scrambles, including one where Branch looked like he tried to go take out his leg with a WWE-like stomp after he slid down. But all of that to say, you know, between Ayuk and Purdy and McCaffrey, I mean, they went and took it, right? Mm-hmm. You left the money on the table, and they just said, thanks for the tip.
By the way, we didn't talk about them failing to down the punt at the...
No, that's right, too. Yeah. You're right. I had that in my notes. Yeah. I was taking notes play by play, and I had all these things circled. And that one had like four exclamation points next to it.
Yeah.
Like that is atrocious. And that's where to me it you know, it comes to the point of when we talk about this kicking of the field goal and it's all on Dan Campbell. I think Dan Campbell is going to take, again, a lot of the heat, because we're not talking about Gibbs's fumble or the special teams crew messing up what they're going to do. The end of the game situation, heck, this is the second week where they've completely botched it. Like, this is Nathaniel Hackett level time management that we've seen now. For the, you know, against the Buccaneers, it was no harm because Todd Bowles didn't want to call a timeout, but how do you botch a kneel down? And then, you know, now in now in this situation, you know, if Ben Johnson is going to be the Washington Commanders head coach or the Seattle Seahawks head coach, that would be the first question I'd be asking him in that interview process is, how the heck is this happening 2 weeks in a row? Can you at least take me through this? Because that stuff is epic proportional fail on Detroit in those scenarios. And so when it comes down to it, we're all talking about Dan Campbell and kicking field goals. We talk about medal stands here a lot.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even make my medal stand considering the Gibbs fumble and that mismanagement. Maybe it'd win a bronze. Maybe it, you know, in that scenario. Yeah. But it's, you know, the Gibbs fumble to me was the ultimate backbreaker, because you're throwing your defense back against the field and muffed punt, and now you don't give yourself a chance, you know, at the end of the game. Yeah, just an absolute mess.
You know, fantasy football podcast. Can I give a couple fantasy takeaways that I had from this
game? Go ahead.
First off, I think obviously like Jahmyr Gibbs is going to be seen as a probably like maybe end of first round sort of pick next season, and I think that that is totally viable. Obviously, we've seen his talent come through, especially in the postseason. He really came on the second half of the season, but I think that we have to also be aware that David Montgomery is still going to be very involved. Even in this game, David Montgomery had 15 carries to Jahmyr Gibbs' 12. So I think if you're still going to look for value out of the Lions' backfield, I think Montgomery is going to still be the play next season come draft time, because somebody is going to really bite at Gibbs' value. I think somebody also that people are going to bite at for recency bias and value from this game is Jameson Williams.
Yeah, exciting one, isn't it?
You're going to think about the fact that he had the huge end around for the touchdown, and he caught a touchdown, and you're like, oh my goodness. But he also still, like, despite that, he had three targets. So it's not like he was.
And one of them went through his hands awkwardly could. And there's another play that he could have had.
So, I think that there's the hype for Jameson Williams will probably build going into next season. I think we'll kind of have to pump the brakes on that a little bit. I mean, sure, he's probably going to be more involved next season, and Josh Reynolds will be less involved. But Sam Laporta and Amon-Ra St. Brown are still going to pile up on the targets in that offense. So those were my takeaways, I think, on the Lions side that I found to be really interesting fantasy-wise.
I know we're going to dive into some stuff in the future on future episodes of the upcoming 2024 fantasy football season. If and when Ben Johnson leaves, we think that's going to happen. I think that's also going to play a part in this. As you're looking at some of these players, somebody is bound to take a dip, and you just wonder who it is. Curious to see how that plays out in Detroit, but in all reality, it's going to be tough to guess come draft time on who's really going to be affected. Heck, it may be Jared Goff and everybody else is screwed.
How about that? So,
could be that scenario. Then the 49ers are just, the 49ers.
George Kittle's a little bit older. Maybe he slides back a little off health concerns and such. Certainly a good hype man. But otherwise, the song remains the same. Maybe there's a little more love for Ayuk.
Yeah. It is amazing to me on how much Christian McCaffrey has hurt Deebo Samuel's fantasy value. Mm-hmm. It's been a 2 year thing, but when we think of Deebo and when he was healthy, how much of a points machine, and there are certain times where you're like, okay, still viable, but not in terms of what he was 3 years ago. Well, Christian McCaffrey is just it's nonstop.
I think the variability off Deebo is just maddening, right? Yeah. Because when we look at it overall, right, you're still talking about touchdowns. He still finished as WR15 in PPR leagues. But you go down through the road, 11.3, 22.1, 25.1, 0.6, 11.5, 1.1, misses two games, bye week, comes back. And then you have a number of just big blowout scenarios where he has a 3 week stretch, 22.4, 35.8, 34, that, it ends up averaging, with a huge average and gets him into that 15th slot. But we're not playing, best ball season totals.
Yeah.
Right? Week to week. It's all right. Is he healthy? B, how do you see the game playing out? And this is where you start simulating it in your mind or on Madden or whatever you're using to get to that point.
Ayuk is just the more consistent option, I think. Like, Deebo is such a, from the numbers that you raised out, maybe that's just in my mind, but it just seems like that's just more consistent. I was in a playoff pool, or am in a playoff pool, and a couple of people took Deebo Samuel, and you can only pick one player from one team. Just the point being of Christian McCaffrey's just automatic with his touchdowns. Doug Gottlieb even said on the show Monday, McCaffrey only had 90 yards. And it's like, Yeah, well, I mean, only is you know.
It's kind of funny, right?
Yeah, yeah, but still, you know, he had 42 yards receiving right. as well. But yeah.
That's McCaffrey, 27 points in a PPR league, and that's with Elijah Mitchell scoring a touchdown in this game. So
yeah, when he had to come out after that weird kind of roll through, called out for a play, and Elijah Mitchell gets in. Interestingly, just to punctuate that Ayuk-Debo split, for fantasy purposes, season long, Ayuk bested Debo by 5.5 points.
Oh wow!
You know what I mean? Like, but that's yeah. but that's the thing, right? Week to week, you know, you have I think more consistency in looking at the game log. That's certainly the case. Only two or three real blow up scenarios for Ayuk. Little more steady to where you were at the double digits most weeks.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what I like about it. You know, I'd rather just have the consistent production and go from there. All right, there's your look at the NFC Championship game. Lions heading home, Niners heading off to Vegas, where they will face the Kansas City Chiefs. We may not have as much to talk about from the AFC Championship game, but boy, there is some chatter. We'll talk about it next here on I Want Your Flex.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
It's the Kansas City Chiefs going to the Super Bowl for the 15th time in 13 years. That's what it seems like. Just kidding. But they are there again, fourth time in 5 years. And obviously taking out the San Francisco 49ers, who we talked a lot about in the previous segment. But this AFC Championship game, the opposite of what we saw with San Francisco, still a competitive game, kind of. But it seemed like, in my mind, that the Chiefs were in control throughout. And once they had that 10-point lead, just wanted to keep the Ravens at bay. And just a tough, tough day for Lamar and company in Baltimore.
Just grinding it out. You know, the last thing I want to say at the NFC, thank you, 49ers, to help me out these next 2 weeks. That's all I can say.
Why's that?
Well, you know, with Jason Smith and having
picked, oh, yeah, that's
the,
right.
picked the Lions to the Super Bowl, I got to smash a lot of that talk. And I don't have to deal with that anymore. You can find the podcast of the 4 hours of us screaming at each other, which was quite insane as I am.
I'll tell you a good Super Bowl pick story before we end this podcast, okay?
Okay.
All right, so just we'll mark that down.
Mark that, and we'll remind Dan a little bit later on. But, yeah, this one was interesting, right? It gets right off the jump. It's 14-7. It's like, all right, we got ourselves a shootout. This is going to be crazy. And then that was it. Wheels went off, and we started watching paint dry on the wall. And you had, you know, the inane offensive game plan from Todd Monken as if they were down 4 touchdowns. Abandoning the run. Yeah. I mean, Gus Edwards and Justice Hill combined for 6 carries, 23 yards. All right.
Yeah, and Justice Hill had the first carry of the game.
Yeah.
So after 14:55, it was 5 carries incredible. From that duo.
Patrick Mahomes had nearly as many carries officially as Lamar Jackson did. He had 6. Lamar had 8 for 54, including the long scamper of 21. You had the inane, you know, Flowers dive towards the end. Great play by Snead, but, you know, go down. Set the ball up at the 1-yard line. Mm. It's all good. Get the touchdown. You know, at this point, this is the first noise you guys are making offensively since the first quarter. I get it.
I think that's why he dove. I think because he felt no one else was making any other plays. I think that's like it's desperation mode in his mind when it wasn't. Yeah. It was not at that point. That is just, I think it's such a typical rookie mistake to think like you got to, you know, do it all. You know, he had the taunting penalty, on the same drive, but ended up making up for it. But I think that's where Zay Flowers was mistaken, that he was going to have to be the one, considering they weren't running the ball and nobody else was doing anything.
Yeah, maybe Monken would have called a run at the one, either, you know, a little naked bootleg or a little option play, or maybe Gus Edwards would have heard his name called. I don't know. But all of that to say, 4 sacks, the strip sack fumble, and Lamar throwing the ball to Isaiah Likely in between. How many guys were there? 3? 4?
Yeah, it was not likely to be
No. I mean, and I know he threw up his hand going, hey, I got it. It's like, no, you don't. No, you're not threading the needle there. So, you know, just painful to watch on that side. But, you know, for the Chiefs, while it wasn't pretty, you know, in the yard per play or any of those metrics, it's move the chains, survive another down. Right, Mahomes, a lot of those passes were, what, 3 yards?
Mm-hmm.
4 yards? And for whatever reason, Travis Kelce keeps finding spaces like no other. Or I guess it goes back to what we used to see with Gronkowski. It's like, how's nobody on this guy? He's the apple of his eye. Like, he's the only guy he's looking
yeah.
at here time and time again. And just, you know, that to say, Kelce also made a couple of just ridiculous catches, mm-hmm. right? The touchdown grab, you know, with Hamilton on him. Great throw, great catch. Everything had to work right there. Another one down the middle where he had a big diving catch. So he laid it all out, and he's just a different animal in the playoffs. Like there's just no question with all of those records he's passing Jerry Rice and all these guys. But for Mahomes, didn't need to be spectacular. They just need to be good enough. And that defense that carried him all year took care of business once again. You know, just for the Ravens side of it, like the road back is difficult. But watching this game, like everything and every question everybody had and had been berated for, well, you kind of got to answer in the affirmative. It's like, well, you saw what we'd been talking about. It showed itself once again.
It was odd to me that people were taking a victory lap for the Ravens with the win against the Texans.
Mm-hmm.
Because they hadn't gone to an AFC championship game.
Yeah.
But like that wasn't the goal.
Nope.
And like this is a team that you're playing that was not expected to be where they were. Now, granted, they looked great the week before against the Browns, but rookie quarterback coming in, like that's a game that you should dominate. They didn't, in my mind, accomplish anything in proving people wrong or their doubters wrong. And I think that some people felt that they did, that just Lamar getting to that next step was proving everybody wrong. And then now you get to this stage and you have the game that you have. It was, yeah, now you're got to do a 180 because, again, yeah, he didn't prove it. And you know what concerns me? And I saw this on social media. This was not an original thought of mine, but I did think it was interesting. That 21-yard run that he had on that fourth and short, I understand that the conditions weren't ideal, but it also brings up the point that there is going to be a point where he does slow down if he's not already.
Yep.
You know, and now, like, Odell Beckham Jr. is like calling, like he's lifting up his arm. Like, you have two bad knees. Who are you burning past on the sideline?
Right.
You know, like it just, it was all an absolute mess. And now when you think of, okay, if Lamar is maybe losing a little bit of that speed, brings everything back to, you know, to the base. And Dan Campbell says, who knows if they're ever going to make it back there. I think it's the same thing with the Baltimore Ravens, because I'm not sure on if you could have had a better situation. I'm sure you guys talked about it, Mike and Bursch. I know you've heard it on the network as well, but man, there just didn't seem to be a lot there for that team when it counted.
Yeah, it felt like throughout that entire game, that pocket was collapsing around Lamar, and he would shake off defenders like crazy, but then he would still try to throw it. And you know, this is a completely subjective, I could be wrong about this, but it feels like he would at least try to run more often in the past. Mm-hmm. When that would happen, it felt like he was actively not trying to do that and instead trying to work the passing game, which sometimes it worked, like a couple times it worked, but for the most part he still ended up with only 8 carries, and it seemed like he could have ran on half of the plays. So it was really bizarre. And of course we talk about the game plan, the, you know, Gus Edwards and Justice Hill, 6 carries. Justice Hill had 7 targets. Like, it's just so bizarre.
That little half-ass sidearm swing out pass, a couple of times he didn't step into it at all.
Yeah.
So the ball falls hard. Like, if you actually get it out to Hill, he might have been able to do something with it.
Yeah.
Right? If you're going to set up the flanker screen, how about you make sure the ball actually gets to the guy?
Yeah.
Instead of him diving back, hoping that it's not a backwards pass and stuff.
Yeah. But to your point, Dan, and Jason was saying this with Mike earlier, is it's hard to see the Ravens getting back to this point now. It feels like this was their best opportunity, and everything, especially with the rest of the AFC, because a lot of teams were down in the AFC this season. It feels like, yeah, they missed their best shot.
It was shocking, considering, I know Kansas City dominated the first 40 minutes. They did. They had the ball for about 30 minutes. The Ravens had it for about 10. But still, you're talking about a 10-point ball game. Mm-hmm. To think that you need to come back and do what you did, and then allow guys like Chris Jones to do what he does. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And, you know, fantasy-wise, Mark Andrews, pretty much a non-factor.
Yeah,
right.
You know, just the 2 catches that he had. There's not a lot of positivity on the Ravens side of thing. The Chiefs side of thing, Pacheco gets in the end zone again. That seems like a thing. Travis Kelce playing his best football of the season. And Rashee Rice, not a huge game, but in a game where you are trying to hold on to the football, to have 8 catches on 9 targets tells you the value that he has to that team. And I expect Rashee Rice to have a pretty good Super Bowl 58.
Yeah, I mean, look at his season overall. I think it kind of got dismissed a little bit. Nearly 1,000 receiving yards, 79 catches, all of that stuff. We had the interesting thought piece, Bucky Brooks and I, on the Fox Football Sunday show, because I'd heard him reference it with Andy Furman as I was driving in. And I'm like, all right, so let's carry forward your, hey, there's the captains. Who are you drafting out of the receiving core in your Sandlot football game? And like, I'm taking Kelce and Rice before I'm even looking at the Ravens sideline. And I love Zay Flowers a ton. But, I mean, Rice, I don't think he got nearly the love that he should have for the season he ended up having. Mm.
Should have had a touchdown in the AFC Championship game. Yeah. Called back on the penalty that really didn't have much of an effect on the play whatsoever.
Nah, still neck tackle. But, I mean, because we saw a lot of craziness like that.
Sure.
Hey, Jim Nance with the line of the weekend with the, hey, I haven't seen that move since the longest yard.
But on a screen, when you're trying to let guys through or at least give them a little bit of a, you know, just a little resistance.
Yeah.
It wasn't, you know, a scenario where you're truly pass blocking, you know, that was needed on that play.
There you go. See, I mean, we could go deep dive into other officiating fun. It wasn't as egregious this weekend. So I'm glad folks have saved their vitriol for political plant Taylor Swift or whatever else they're doing. But the Ravens side, just to go back to that one last time, like I actually even asked Lock and Four, right? He's out there, does radio work. in Baltimore and writes for the Washington Post, all that stuff, long time, and he's been with us forever. I go, you know, Mike Tomlin wore it a lot during the year. Does John Harbaugh get anything out there after this? Because you're in the same place that you've been, and the road is going to be that much harder. Again, all those AFC teams rising. And he just responded with, yeah, I don't think Bisciotti really cares. They're good enough. The money prints itself. Move on.
Sure.
It's like, well, that's just hard. That's hard for me to stomach. Like, and I watch the Bears and their ineptitude. They're at least trying to shake it up every couple of years and do something a little bit different. But like for Harbaugh, like if we're gonna do this, is that good enough? Like I don't know. I don't know what that feels like. So I can't say it. But like if I'm good enough to get to the playoffs every year. And then that's the effort I get. My assistant coaches are out interviewing for other jobs, and this is what we put up in the AFC title game. I got some questions.
Yeah, and they're going to have to likely find a new defensive coordinator, you know,
right?
Come next year. So if some of these problems still persist, then you kind of maybe know where the problem lies. But to your point, yeah, he's good to go. It would be a couple more years before I think that they feel that a change would need to be made. It is amazing to me that Aaron Glenn is interviewing for jobs after what happened to that Lions.
No, but that's just it. He got off scot-free, too. I didn't let that happen yelling with Smith. Like, he wanted to do the Campbell thing. I'm like, how about the defensive guy that for a half had everything figured out, and then suddenly, because, what, you didn't get a fourth down, it's like, you can go take 72 yards on us. That's fine.
Sure.
You can go drive another 70 yards on us. That's fine. Like, what the hell happened there?
I think there's a lot that happens. You know, like the 49ers, not that, you know, Steve Wilks has been successful in the National Football League, but you replaced D'Amico Ryans, who replaced Robert Saleh. Those guys go off to head coaching gigs, and Wilks comes in, and now you're having some questions, and now there's the Chase Young deal seems pretty awful with the bad clip that he had yesterday.
Yeah,
I just, you know, this it, interesting just on how the assistant's going. For as great as the Lions offense did look, you also, again, now for the second straight week, have some timing issues at the end, and you're not that that's going to prevent Ben Johnson from getting a job. That's not what I'm saying at all. But it was just a tougher week, I think, for some of those assistants that were interviewing jobs than maybe on the surface. I mean, the Ravens defense in the second half was great against Patrick Mahomes, but I don't know how much the Chiefs were really pushing things. I think they actually felt pretty safe in their 10-point lead and just weren't going to do anything stupid. So
grind out the clock and move on in advance. So, you know, before we end, I mean, you said you had a Super Bowl story.
Yeah, well, I was just the Super Bowl prediction story. I think like we all do, we all go through scenarios and as it ends up, I think I had about three or four matchups that I was going to pick for my Super Bowl. And then now that we have our Super Bowl, I think I would have gotten one team right. And that's just like how bad we are on this in terms of I had a Bengals 49ers. So I did have the 49ers making the Super Bowl, which isn't, by the way, going out on a limb. And that's just as much chalk as you could have for anything else. But in just in terms of even of the game of the four teams that played, I think I probably would have only had one team or so. I think that maybe Kansas City was going to take a step back and I didn't think they'd be able to repeat and do what they did. So just completely awful in making Super Bowl predictions. Even if I had multiple decisions and I landed on the one where the team did make it, my three or four other ones would have just been completely off base and wouldn't even have made it to championship weekend.
Yeah, I went completely off the grid. I just said I'm taking chalk off the board because last year when everybody jumped off the Chiefs post Tyreek Hill, I stayed with them and said, no, this is the path. So I took my victory lap. Not really, a big wide, what was it, 6-1, if you'd bet it. Same thing this year. It's like, all right, would I be surprised if they ran back? It might be ugly. And that's before the season played out. And then watching it midseason, I would have taken a dime on the dollar for anything I'd bet the way that offense was rolling in the middle of the year. And San Fran, I just took them off the grid, just saying, all right, that's the presumptive they're going to be at least in the mix, so let's go find another darling. And that's how I got to my Giants Jaguars, really just trying to unearth some gold, and both of them failed me on so many levels. But they failed spectacularly, guys, so they gave us content for days. Right? So in the end, you know, like if they were just, you know, 9-8, 8-9, it's like, meh. No, instead, they both sucked. The Giants blew up quickly, and then the Jaguars, they were only rivaled by the Eagles as to how quickly they descended into hell.
I think I told the story. I think like the Giants were going to be one of my picks for the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And then we did the pod here, and Mike, you went first, and you said Giants. And I'm like, well, crap. Well, I can't pick the Giants now that Mike did. So then I pivot, and went elsewhere. So, oh, man.
Well, I saved you from looking like an idiot like me, Dan.
Listen, if we want to talk about failing spectacularly with our preseason picks, mine also did that, but in very different ways. My preseason pick, according to the chart that we have in the studio, it was a Chargers-Cowboys Super Bowl. And that is, the Chargers just completely failed, and then the Cowboys got to the playoffs and then completely failed. I had Justin Herbert winning the MVP. But my out on a limb, I think I get credit, because my out on a limb was Jordan Love good, Packers win 10 games. And they technically did win exactly 10 games because they won their playoff games. So,
oh, technicality.
Hey, man, take every victory lap you can.
Right. We're going to throw preseason affairs into this now, you know, Burge? I mean,
well, he would have been in uniform for one of them. No.
I will say, I was down to, for the NFC South, my pick was Falcons win the NFC South. But I didn't know if I was going to pick the Falcons or Panthers. Good thing I picked the Falcons, even if they didn't win, because you couldn't have been more wrong in picking Carolina. Oh, man. We're looking for better things in 2024, right, team-wise. All right. So that's going to do it for the pod. Hit Ryan Bershinger up at Ryan Bershinger. You can find Mike at Swollen Dome. And hit me up at Dan Beyer on Fox. Next week, we're going to have some fun. We're going to look ahead to the 2024 offseason and also give you our thoughts on how Super Bowl 58 is going to play out in Las Vegas. And then in a couple of weeks, we will do our top 60, our draft, to preview the 2024 fantasy season. You know, we're going to do a draft, 60 picks, who you like. And not really who you don't like, because we won't be picking players we don't like, but we'll get you set for next season that way. So for Mike Harmon and Ryan Bershinger, I'm Dan Beyer. We will talk to you next week right here on I Want Your Flex.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.